in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Again with basically what's been going on, and seems to be a nasty continuation of the previous couple of weeks' topics, and I don't see anything getting better.
I don't know. Ebola's getting worse. Water's getting really bad out west. I don't know. Have you looked at the recent drought monitor?
And like seeing the progression of California over years in just the last couple of months, I mean, the state has gone from basically in a period of 3 years to perfect hunky-dory to everything
really bad.
Is nasty as dried blood red color that it can possibly be on the drought monitor. And we spent a couple of years under that here in Texas. 2011 was basically hell. Nothing would grow. Something like 15% of all the trees in the state died. Or are still dying. I've got a lot of them out on the farm today. And simply nothing would grow. And we were in, like, drought 4, drought 5, the worst, like, parts that you could possibly be, and it was hell. I mean, it was like an apocalyptic scene out here. Everything started dropping its leaves in midsummer. Everything caught on fire, and now the entire state of California is like that. So basically, you know, where all the awesome vegetables that we eat every day come from, well, guess what? They don't have any water.
Well, not only that, but a lot of the wineries are out there, too. I mean, you might see no wine or lack of wine. So, yeah. You know, the wineries are out there.
I guess it's going to take something like that that will, like, affect the elite. You know, because it's like, oh, well, my lettuce went up from, like, a dollar a head to, like, now it's $1.75 a head. I'm Daddy Warbucks. I won't notice that. But, oh, my God, I can't get my Napa Valley wine anymore? Something needs to be done about this.
Yeah. There's Napa Valley wine. There's avocados. There's lots of walnuts. Almonds.
I'm trying to think what else. I'm hearing an echo. Yeah, basically, like, everything in your produce section that doesn't come from Mexico comes from California, except citrus.
Yeah, I'm trying to see what else. I'm trying to think. Well, they used to grow a lot of citrus. Now it doesn't. Well, maybe they do. I don't know. Anyone from California that can tell us if they're still growing citrus out there anymore?
Actually, yeah, they are growing citrus. And the way it, like, breaks down, it's like most of the, like, eating oranges are grown in California, and most of the juicing oranges are grown in Texas and Texas and Florida.
Oh, okay.
And not that there's anything wrong with, like, the juicing oranges. They taste just fine, and they're completely and totally edible, but they're a little bit less marketable because they've got a thicker rind and are a little bit harder to peel.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then Ebola seems to be really being up tech with the two Americans are bringing over from Africa. So.
And what's really scary is, like, the news that came out last week that I barely saw mentioned in, like, the big press at all, that one of the American doctors that was over there that had died, he actually contracted Ebola, and while it was still incubating and he wasn't showing any obvious signs, he came back to America, visited his family, and then went back to Africa to die.
Ew. That doesn't sound like fun.
I mean, that's just, like, you know, one step away from some kind of outbreak scenario. I mean, you know, guy comes home, sees his kids, his little five-year-old doesn't even know he's sick, goes to kindergarten, gets everybody else in the school sick. Next thing you know, most of Manhattan's bleeding out of their mouths and eyes.
Well, I think from what I can't remember where I saw it. Was it on Today's Show or CNN Today about the WHO, the World Health Organization? They're freaking out, and they're basically saying it's not under control at all, was the gist of the story.
Well, anybody
if WHO is saying this thing is not good, you're just going, okay.
Well, just following the news and knowing the WHO has a feelers on the ground and is more, you know, informed about this topic, and we are relying on what comes through the press. Hey, this Ebola thing, I think it was out of control, let's say, a month ago. But what do I know?
That could be.
And there are just so many different problems there. Oh, God. Oh, all right. I did see them mention that on Fox News, and this segment just about pissed me off because, I mean, you know, the Fox News anchor guy, I forget which one it was, but he was just damn near racist. I mean, he was basically trying to say how an Ebola outbreak could never happen in America because we're different than they are in Africa. And he went on to say that, I mean, this is what the guy said. I mean, this paraphrasing of him is not very off at all. He basically said, well, one, we've got hospitals, and two, we've got things like hygiene and healthcare and regular bathing. Like, people in Africa are so ignorant they don't know to bathe every day. It's like, yeah, their sewer systems.
But there's no vaccine or anything for Ebola. There's nothing. So I don't know.
I mean, it was just like a complete, I mean, this guy was like puffing on his, go America, that could never happen here because we're a hell of a lot better than them third world Africans. I mean,
that's why we have a drug-resistant malaria right now.
No, there's drug resistant everything.
Yeah, exactly. There is drug resistant everything.
Didn't like one of the CIA directors or former directors a couple of weeks ago say, look, I mean, the way these like antibiotic resistant superbugs are evolving and developing, we're basically going to, and this is scary as shit, y'all, we're basically going to return to a state of affairs before we had penicillin, before we had antibiotics.
Yeah, I saw that. Yep, it's pretty bad. I mean, everything's starting to go out of control. Like I said, I think here in Nevada, they just shut down on one of the ditches. You know, a lot of people got their water rights taken away because of the lack of rain, no snow. And the Truckee went down, I think, from 350 cubic feet per second down to, like, almost 110. So it dropped 200 CFS, and it's, like, dry. I'll have to go down and take some pictures and post them. But it's pretty scary. I mean, I think I keep going, okay, so how come we don't have the water restrictions California does? I think that's coming. I think our idiots here, idiots in charge, need to get their act together, but I've been saying this for a while. So, yeah.
Yeah.
The idiots in charge are looking more like idiots because they don't, you can tell some of them don't know what to do because things are going out of control. So, that's just my take.
Now, another little interesting situation is developing a little bit closer to home, and here's another one for, like, lovely New York. And, you know, it seems like the weirdest crap you hear coming out of New York. I mean, I think there's, like, an ongoing contest between the Oakland PD and the New York PD to see who has the crappiest cops.
Oh, I agree with you there. Oh, you need to throw LAPD in there, too.
They've actually kind of, like, slacked back. I mean, they sort of peaked at the L.A. riots. And, all right, let me see if I can find this one. Yeah, y'all remember the guy, Eric Gardner, the large asthmatic man who the NYPD had to choke to death because they accused him of selling cigarettes? Well, that situation just got a little bit more interesting because that man's death by chokehold has been ruled a homicide. So, we're going to have to see how this one plays out. I know there's already a lot of controversy about that case, too. I mean, people were outraged by basically what happened, and then a lot of the so-called police community was outraged at the outrage and was basically being really condescending about the man, being borderline racist and saying that, you know, he basically deserved to die because he resisted the will of the police. And I don't know. I'm just getting tired. I mean, what happened to protect and serve? And, you know, why are these cops wanting to run around like Blackwater mercenaries with basically, you know, very little consequences in any of their actions? It didn't used to be like that, man. I mean, really, in the last, I'd have to say, 15 years or so, I mean, you just can have to look out and see the militarization of the police force. I mean, they are not there to help out their communities. I mean,
they're ramping up. They know they're going to have to do, when things get totally out of control here, one way or another, they're going to have to do martial law. So I think they're ramping up for that. I mean, the military is. Who knows? I mean, if the military is, then I'm sure our local police have been training for it.
All I got to say about it is this. I mean, it would basically be an occupation of the United States of America. And I hate to say it, but we're not very damn good at occupying anybody now, are we? Now, we're awesome shocking on rolling in and, like, you know, getting our foot in the door. But after that, it kind of gets a little bit iffy. Now, I mean, you think that they had a hard time fighting the Viet Cong in the jungle, and they're having a hard time fighting the jihadis in the desert. How hard of a time do you think they're going to have fighting Mr. Country Boy Can Survive out in the woods? I mean, shit, every third person out here in, like, rural Texas is a Rambo.
Yeah, it's going to get really interesting. Especially if we have no water. I read one article today about, they're saying, people might have to move out of California if the drought gets bad enough because cities will not have water. And someone one of our guests I spoke to yesterday, her daughter lives in Santa Cruz, California, and she said they have, like, no water. Santa Cruz, California has, like, no water.
Well, it's nice to see that they're catching up with the water supply crisis in West Texas. And, we've talked about it before, and there have been, I came across a couple of articles basically talking about more or less the same thing, that, hey, it's basically coming down to a choice that, what did this one say? I think it said that by 2040, people might have to decide if they want potable drinking water or hydrocarbon resources, because they're forecasting there might not be enough water to do both.
I would say it would be before 2040, because that's going on right now. That's too far out. That's going on right now. So I would say their 2040 is just trying to make people feel good. Hey, that's going on right now. Yeah. And then what was the big one I saw on The Intercept? Oh, the CIA searched Senate computers. Whoopee! But have a four?
Oh, yeah. Hi, we're the NSA, and we promise we're not, snooping on every little Tom, Dick, and Harry out there. It's like, yeah, right. I mean, if Congress doesn't even have, like, protection from being snooped on, you think we do? No.
Well, I think I knew that, everything Hoover did, they're still doing, the FBI. And CIA's just as bad, so it's like, okay, take your pick. Which bad person do you want?
Well, the NSA is just listening to everybody. The CIA is the ones that actually get out there and actively screw with everybody.
Yeah.
We haven't even touched on the whole Middle East yet. I mean, we've kind of been just
tiptoeing
around.
Oh, that's
probably
going to take a whole hour. Maybe we should do that after the break and take the whole hour.
Because you're going to, like, piss off, like, actually both sides can kind of eat a dick if you want to, look at it rationally. I mean, Israel, I think, could certainly be using a lighter hand in what they're doing. And it's like, come on, Gaza. I mean,
That's not how I see it at all. They're murdering. They're killing. Let's just call it for what it is. They're murdering and killing innocent children, mothers. I mean, they're taking away their food and water. Let's call it for what it is. I mean, it's killing people. I mean, why would you bomb a hospital? They knew they bombed a school and a hospital. They knew they were doing it, too. That's just murder, if you ask me. They're just killing people. I mean,
a lot of the information that's out about it, too. I mean, like, well, it's okay for them to, like, bomb all the other UN schools because they found munitions in a UN school. When it's like, but it was actually in an abandoned school that was basically an unoccupied building that they had some rockets in, supposedly. I mean, there's just, like, so much crap going on. In fact, I'm going to read this one. All right, the Times of Israel, oh, God, they're getting ballsy out there, published an article called, headlined, it was actually an opinion in a blog piece in the Times of Israel called When Genocide is Permissible. And it stayed up for some time, then the post was removed, but thanks to awesome things like the Internet Wayback Machine, it takes a snapshot of most everything on the Internet and preserves it for posterity, should you ever need to look crap up that's been deleted. Well, there it is right there. And This is, I'm going to read this article in its entirety. When Genocide is Permissible, authored by Yohanan, actually it's probably pronounced all weird, by Yohanan Gordon. All right. Judging by the number of casualties on both sides in this almost one-month-old war, one would be led to the conclusion that Israel had resorted to disproportionate means in fighting a far less capable enemy. Now let me add some editorial to that. No shit, buddy? I mean, come on. I mean, you've lost, what, 3 civilians and you're up in the 2000s now? Yeah, that is really disproportionate. Back to the article. Now, this is as far as what meets the eye, but it's obvious that the U.S. and the U.N. are completely out of touch with the nature of this foe and are therefore not qualified to dictate or enforce the rules of this war. Because when it comes to terror, there is much, much more than meets the eye. Oh, so he's trying to tell the United States of America that we don't know we don't know anything about going in and taking territory from the population that lives there and forcing.
I think we did it to what the Native Americans? Hello, that's exactly what we did to the Native Americans.
Yeah, and that's exactly what's happening.
We put them on reservations.
Well, all right. You know what, I'm not even going to read the whole thing. I mean, he's basically going on, we're at war with an enemy whose charter calls for the annihilation of our people. And, you know, he goes on and on and on. And then you get to the last paragraph of it. It says, I will conclude with a question for all the humanitarians out there. Prime Minister Netanyahu clearly stated at the outset of this incursion is that his objective is to restore a sustainable quiet for the citizens of Israel. We have already established that it is the responsibility of every government to ensure the safety and security of its people. And here's where he makes his big statement. If political leaders and military experts determine that the only way to achieve a goal of sustaining quiet is through genocide, is it then permissible to achieve those responsible goals? Yes, upward inflection. Because he put a question mark in it so he can say, no, 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 I'm not saying genocide can be justified in any ways. I'm just asking the question.
Oh, even though they're doing it in real life. It's like, really? I don't know. I don't even like to listen to Yahoo or Nitin, whatever his name is anymore. I mean, yeah.
It's getting kind of weird when, like, Howard Stern has jumped in on the equation and he basically says, if you're a good American, you'll support Israel.
I'm sorry, I guess I'm not a good American. So I haven't liked Israel for a long time, and ever since, like, I did Model League, and you actually know what's really going on over there, and it's always been about the oil, and now they're fighting over what little water and resources they have over there, and with the population growth, yeah, I mean, of course they're all fighting. They're fighting. I watched the Showtime climate series, and they had one over there where the New York Times guy went over Thomas Friedman went over to Syria, and he talked about the drought, and he actually talked to the farmers, and it was about the drought, and there was an uprising in Syria because the drought, and the farmers were mad, and they came into town, and guess what they started? They started fighting. They were mad at the president because there was a drought. And he didn't do anything to help them. So it's like, it's all with climate, water, resources, oil, the same stuff.
Yeah, but, I mean, what can you do when, I mean, if you're asking for water and there is no water to give, what are you supposed to do?
Good point. We're probably going to be asking that. We're probably going to be watching that in California. What do you do? Are people just going to have to get up and leave and move? That's going to be really interesting. Yeah, if there's no water, I don't know.
There are some people that are feeling...
They're going to have to turn off their golf courses. You can't water your golf courses. Or, that water park, if you want to actually drink and maybe flush the toilet or have your shower. I don't know. Maybe we can't water our golf courses or have our water parks. Those are the questions you guys... We're going to be asking ourselves,
you know,
what do we really need it for?
everybody keeps talking about how desalination is the way, and look at Dubai. Dubai does it. Well, Dubai's a very small country.
And
I mean,
they're
a very tiny country, and they're floating on all that oil money. So they can afford desalination. I mean, on the scale of
California, I think they might have one, but I know they've been recycling water for a long time. And when I was taking an environmental engineering class, one of my professors actually talked about they were going to do what they did up on the space shuttle and recycle the wastewater for drinking water. But when you have no water, do you have a choice? If it's a choice, are you going to really care?
Well, maybe Bear Grylls was right all along. You either drink your piss or you'll probably die.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, these are the questions. And like I said, we're going to see it play out. I mean, we're going to see how nasty things get in California. I saw one where they were turning off water in one of those big, magnificent homes. I can't remember which one it was. That's a museum that's up on the hill with their fountain. And the fountain the pool was gone. They couldn't fill the pool. So, I mean, it's like, okay. I think this is an NBC report from the other night. You could probably go online and watch it. But, yeah, you have to think it. Look at where you have water, where we're wasting our water. We can't waste our water anymore. If you want to live, we cannot waste this water. Sorry.
Well, unfortunately, we'll just... there's no way around it. It's just going to hurt.
It's going to hurt. It's going to be painful. We're going to have a big, huge reality check of life right now. A lot of places are having that.
I've actually got, another little topic that I'd like to talk about that really isn't so much news, but it's more or less historical news that... A couple of days ago, it was the anniversary of something that happened actually local to me here in this little part of Texas. There's a little town called Slocum. There's not that many people there. They're a little 1A high school like we were. And in fact, we played them all the time. And I did all the, UIL nerd, interscholastic smarts for contests. Slocum thought they were some hot stuff, but... I just like to beat Slocum.
What we're up against. I'm not coming to you because this mission.
Okay, that was kind of weird.
Huh.
A Pal Talk app popped up on me. But anyway, all right. In 1910, something happened in Slocum, and this was a town that, I know people from there, and if I'd have known that this happened when I was competing against these people back in high school, I would have been... just outright mean towards them. But basically, Slocum was actually a black community. It was more or less formed by freed slaves, and they were actually doing pretty prosperous. I mean, there are a lot of black landowners there. It's like the main store in town was owned by a black gentleman, and, everything was going pretty good. But to make a long story short and paraphrase it, more or less what happened is there were a lot of white people that didn't like to see these Negroes prospering, more or less. And all right, basically what happened was a white businessman had a dispute with the black store owner, and it became a whole blown-out thing. Then, mysteriously, a black man gets lynched, seemingly at random, and then rumors start spreading around that the black community is planning to retaliate when absolutely nothing of the sort was going on. So here's what went down in Little Slocum, Texas. They're estimating between 200 and 300 white men went into this small town of about the same population. They blocked off all the roads. They cut the telegraph lines. They cut any way of communication or getting out. They all got their guns, formed skirmish lines, and just basically marched through town. I mean, they found 24 bodies, and there were an estimated up to 150, 200 people that were never, ever found. Some of them might have got away. Almost all the bodies that they did find were shot in the back. And this was basically absolute, abject genocide. That's what happened here. And you really will not read about it anywhere. I mean, I didn't know that this happened in a town like 30 miles down the road from me. I mean, I had absolutely no idea. It wasn't mentioned in any Texas history courses. I mean, there was some mention of it, and every now and then it's brought up, but it's not in the vernacular. I mean, there's not even a historical marker in the town to signify what happened. And the only reason it's getting a little bit of press this year on its anniversary is because somebody finally went out and wrote a book about it, which I would like to leave, but, I mean, that's absolutely horrible. I mean, this is, like, worse than the Tulsa massacres. I mean, this was a more horrific incident than any of the other lynching incidents that happened in the Deep South. And, well, here's what happened. One of the guys that was getting shot at, that watched his brothers and his friends die, getting shot himself, he made it to Palestine, Texas, the next town over, the county seat. He made it out and was so scared he wanted to be placed in jail for his own safety because they were literally going through and killing everybody. And the sheriff, the Anderson County sheriffs went down there and they found out about it and they were horrified. This was an absolute massacre. And they basically subpoenaed the entire town, the entire population of the town, you know, as witnesses to what happened. And they were going to indict 13 people in the first round. And it was starting to make the press. I mean, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram picked it up. I mean, the story was being circulated locally. So what happens? Well, they decide to move the jurisdiction of this trial down to Harris County in Houston, Texas. Because they honestly didn't think they would be able to get a fair trial in Anderson County, because chances are, I mean, the people on the jury would be related to or friends of some of the accused. So they moved the trial down to Harris County. What do they do in Harris County? Not a damn thing. They didn't prosecute the case. It was dropped. Everybody was let out of jail, and, you know, the rest of the story is basically all of the black people that weren't killed decide to leave. I mean, there are a dozen stories, I mean, hundreds of stories out there of people that basically had to leave their livelihoods, leave their land, you know, to basically flee with their lives because they just saw, I mean, their family and friends get killed. I mean, 1910, that's not really that long ago, y'all. That's only 100 years. And the fact that it was swept under the rug, I mean, it happened close to here, and I didn't even know about the damn thing. I mean, there are, like, East Texas culture museums in Palestine. There's one in there, and there's not a single damn mention. I mean, it does talk about a lot of the ex-slave culture after the word of the Emancipation Proclamation got here. But, I mean, there's no mention of this. And I think that's just absolutely damn sad.
Well, of course, it's who writes the history? The winners. Of course, they're not going to write about a massacre. Who wants to really know what happened? I mean, you read Howard Zinn's People's History United States, and he goes through stuff like that. He goes through black history, Native American history, women's history. I mean, he goes through the people's history. I mean, you read that book, and it's like an eye-opener. You're like, crap, there's a lot of stuff they never taught us or told us. And you're like, okay, yeah.
It makes you wonder how many other stories are out there like that. The only reason it's receiving a modicum of press is because somebody just wrote a book about it, which I would like to get, too, and read. I mean, I know the synopsis of the case, but I don't know if I really want to read 160 pages of that, to tell you the truth.
That's probably going to be really gruesome and not something, I mean, it's not, yeah, it's probably not, it's, hopefully they're not sugarcoating it. Sounds like they haven't. And it's not going to be pretty. I mean,
I'm at the point now that every time I drive through Slocum, Texas, I'm going to litter in their town or something just because.
But yeah, I mean, it's just kind of the way history is. Conquer murder, kill, enslave, take over the resources. I mean, you really boil down our and religion. Yeah, you boil down the history. That's what it's been for the last, 5,000 years? I mean, yeah.
But, you know, especially here in the South, I mean, I think the whole racism thing, yeah, there are still some holdouts out there, but it's eventually going to go away. Because, I mean, if you actually look, now that everybody's more or less living together and getting along, I mean, you're starting to see, I mean, both cultures merging. I mean, nowadays, an interracial couple, cool, nobody cares about that anymore. It's like a normal, everyday thing, but... I mean, even not that long ago, it was just like the biggest social taboo. One of the guys that I work with, he was a security guard when I was working for Blue Cross Blue Shield. I mean, this guy, you know, he'd go out and smoke cigarettes with me, was talking with him. I mean, you know, just an old, scruffy, like, white country guy, too. But he finally mentioned his wife, and it took him forever to finally admit to me. And it was weird the way he said it. He was almost embarrassed when he told me that he was married to a black woman, I mean, since, like, the 70s. And he was just telling me of all the stories. I mean, they had to switch. I mean, they had to go through four different flavors of Christian churches before they found one that they were welcome at. And, I mean, just, like, I mean, I don't get it. I just really don't get a lot of it. But, I mean, things are changing now. There are some holdouts, but, I mean, like I said, you see an interracial couple now, it's absolutely no big thing at all.
Oh, I know. I see here. There's interracial couples all over in Denver, too. It's like, yeah, back in, what was it, the 50s, 60s, when it was illegal to do that. And, yeah, it's kind of odd. You think, well, like, you're like, holy cow, that wasn't that long ago. You're like, and that was illegal? That's what the scary thing is. And just even blacks getting the right to vote. You know, they talked about, what, the freedom movement, or the, when I think it was on Channel 6, I watched something about it, and I was like, holy cow, that was not that long ago. They just went down to, I think it was Alabama or Mississippi, just to get the blacks registered to vote. And you're like, holy cow, who thinks about that? I mean, and as Cop pointed out, you know, there's Wounded Knee. Can't forget about Wounded Knee. And then there was Wounded Knee, too, in the, was that the 80s or 70s? 80s or 70s, one of those. And that was lovely government shooting at them in the 80s.
You know, and, bringing it back to... I mean, I can't really help but feel a little bit sympathetic for the Gazans and the Palestinians because, I mean, I kind of see them as sort of in the similar situation as the Native Americans were.
They're in the exact same position. They're fighting for their lives.
Yeah, somebody came in, occupied their land, told them, you can never come back. They put them on these two little reservations and... You know, that's pretty much where we stop. We just put them on the reservations and left them to wither and die. But in the Palestinian case, it's a little bit worse. They're taking pieces of the reservation away from them. They've been doing that since I was a little kid. I mean, some of the first news I remember ever seeing, you know, back in the day with Tom Brokaw and Peter Jennings and crap, was... You know, talking about building these settlements being built in the West Bank, and they're still doing the very same thing today. I mean, it's like, yeah, they're on the reservation, only this time on the reservation, they're making the reservation selectively smaller, and they're shelling the hell out of it. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, what Hamas is doing is kind of, is very stupid, I think. I mean, they really can't do anything but annoy Israel in the first place and cause nothing but a retaliation of thousands of lives. But then again, how else do you expect, I mean, how else is a caged animal supposed to act? I mean, it's got to strike out in whatever way it can, even if it's more or less symbolic, even if it causes a hell of a lot of more pain to it.
Well, yeah, especially if you're fighting for your life. That's what they're doing. They're fighting for their life. They're fighting for survival, you know? I think Cop wants to call in.
Oh, awesome.
He needs the number. Do you know the number?
We are, hang on, I think I got it. We are 504-273-7379. The request lines are now open.
Till we get to Fukushima after the break. More depressing news.
Oh, that's cool. Well, Ray's kind of awesome. Well, congratulations to her and her new show in the Palatalk newsroom. If I knew more about it, I could plug it properly, but I'm going on limited intel.
So, but yeah, I mean, the Native Americans have been fighting. They're still fighting for their lives, you could say, in many ways today.
You know, I think, well, it's especially, like, weird to see because, you know, you think a nice, friendly, polite Canada, and just, I mean, I'm still following the news about what's going on with, like, the tribal situations up in Canada, that basically the Crown is like, no, this isn't your land. And the Indians are like, no, we've got treaties and agreements that says it ours. And it actually got kind of interesting because not that long ago, the tribes won a Canadian Supreme Court case. And basically they can tell all the frackers and all the sportsmen and anybody else that's on their land to get the hell off because Supreme Court said it basically is their land and they do have control over it. So good, good.
Yeah. I mean, Idle No More. Yeah, I haven't seen any more of Idle No More. I wanted to try to get someone on from Idle No More to see what's going on up there. They were really fighting last year.
Absolutely anybody from...
Maybe he'll try again.
Yeah, well, echo too, but it seems to be okay now. Hey, Cop, if you're listening to us, try giving us a call again, man. That just...
If not, I'll talk yeah, to we'll get him.
Slipped out.
Hello.
Oh, there he is.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good, how are
yeah,
you?
Yeah, well, you were talking about Native Americans. Well, you can. We've been fighting Homeland Security since 1492. And anyway, Wounded Knee, if you know the story about it, back in 1890, they rounded up Lakota and all women and children, and then were forced marching them, and somebody shot the first round, and they killed the women and babies and all. There was a couple of survivors who just took off wounded, and that's how the story got back to the tribes of what happened. Then in the 1970s, another Wounded Knee trying to fight for our rights. This time, Leonard Battier was charged for killing two FBI agents, which was a bunch of lies because there was no full ballistic test by the government and all this. They brought in the Army, the National Guard, they had everything. You can see it on YouTube, but that one. Right now, as we talk, there's almost a civil war in Arizona. The Peabody Corporation wants to relocate the Navajo Indians again.
Oh, the Navajos. Okay, I've been down in that area before.
This time, they got a barbed wire across this area. Peabody versus 578 tribes. This time, nobody's going to be pushing nobody because they found mineral rights and all on their land.
Uh-huh.
And they want to take it. Like, you know, we're back. Here we're going back to the 18th century again.
Yeah, here we go.
Well, I know Nevada dumped the Nevada test site. That's like sacred land down there out north of Las Vegas, and they bombed that, and that's all polluted down there.
Yeah. There's a lot of buildings are being discovered now that are on sacred land. And when they find out, that company, if they can't take the building apart and move it, the company has to reimburse the Native American tribe money for having that building on the sacred land. Such as in Pennsylvania, there's a factory where they make crowns for the kids. They found out it was located on Native American burial ground. So now each year the tribe gets so much money. I'm not talking about change now, some big bucks.
Oh, yeah. Well, I grew up in Colorado, and we had an East, I think it was the 1800s, too. We had the Sand Creek Massacre with, oh, I don't know what tribe it was out there. But they did the same thing out there. I think, I'm not sure, it was the Army, and they rounded up the women and children and slaughtered them, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was out in eastern Colorado. I'm trying to think. Oh, I can't think of where. I'd have to look it up again. But you could probably Google Sand Creek Massacre and read about it. But I think with that one, too, the Methodist Church was involved, which I read. I was like, oops. That's not good.
There's only one tribe that never signed a treaty to the United States, and that were the Seminoles. We're still at war with them, with the government. And every tribe that signed a treaty, the treaty was broken. And if I remember my numbers correctly, I think it was 3,200 and some odd treaties signed and promises. But the government only kept one by stealing their land, one way or another.
Yeah.
But now, if you do your research, the state of Florida has to pay the Seminole Nation millions of dollars per year because they put a road right through their land. So they're getting money from that. They're the ones that went out and bought the Hard Rock Cafe. Now they're buying casinos up here, you know. So they're one of the richest casinos. And then the government wants to get their 2 cents in.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course. Well, I know I've read Native American. I've read like 3 or 4 books, and yeah, exactly. I read the same stuff over and over, and it sickens me. I've read Sarah Winnemucca, which is out here in Nevada with those tribes. I read a lame deer, I think one, and he was Lakota, I believe. Is that one Lakota?
Well, when I was in college, I had history courses. And I raised my hand, the teacher says, can I help you? You got a question? I said, yes. I asked her, can you show me a history book about losers, not winners? And boy, she got mad, kicked me out, and gave me a pee and said, get out of here. Because I was going to throw the book at her. Another course I had, I embarrassed her so bad, I only lasted 2 weeks. And they had no choice but to give me a B and get me out. Because two-thirds of your history books that you read or the information is not accurate at all.
Oh, no. It's all whitewashed.
And the place where it's printed out is down there in Texas.
Yep.
I think it's in Texas. Yep.
Yeah, here in Texas, we are good. I mean, the Texas School Board's job, it seems, is to screw up our textbooks and therefore the rest of the country's.
Yeah, Texas starts it and then screws up the rest of the country.
I follow those sites, too, and, I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, they basically want to replace every textbook with the Bible, the white man's Bible.
Oh,
yeah, in fact, I went over to, I had to show respect by going into a few churches, and I walked in and I had my eagle feathers on and my French jacket and everybody else's suit and tie, and they're looking at me like, who the hell this guy is? I went in to pay respects on a few people, you know, funerals and all. They all looked at me and a priest came up to me and he knew exactly where I was coming from, you know, he didn't say nothing. He said something in Latin. And I looked at him, I turned around and said something back to him in Lakota.
That's good.
And everybody's looking at everybody, what are they saying?
That's funny.
You had to call in and get me pissed. You done called in and, like, pissed me off, man. I had no idea they were trying to kick the Navajo off, a bunch of tribes off the reservation. Man, what are you doing?
I'll tell you where you can look it up right now when you get a chance. It's called Broken Rainbow. Type it in later on your browser. It's part one to part seven.
Yeah.
Broken Rainbow. That's what it's called. You're going to see it from Washington, D.C., all the way up to Arizona. You're going to see the Peabody Corporation on one side of the fence, and you're going to see Native Americans and elders on the other side. And they're still fighting as we talk right now. And
Navajos. Ooh, they are. I'm trying to think. Where was he Navajo? I can't think of it. Maybe he was from New Mexico. I'm trying to think of the one that fought the government with his horse down there. Crazy Horse, which one? Was he Navajo?
Oh, yeah, you're talking about, one, Custard? Crazy Horse, Sitting Bull.
Crazy, yeah. Or not, no. I think I'm getting my tribes mixed up on which ones. Let me look up.
And some of the people from Texas went up there to join forces with the Native Americans. And a lot of them weren't the Native Americans either.
And you know the way I see it, Cop, is all these militia people wanted to get their guns out and stand up for the rights of crazy rancher, crazy racist rancher Ted Bundy.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
you know,
it's going to
take,
you know,
one round. They got the FBI looking at it. They got all these government officials sitting in the middle of this thing, waiting for somebody to shoot somebody. You know, but this time,
and they'll just go.
Yeah, what are they going to do? It's going to be another Waco type thing. They're going to send in the military, tanks, and you name it, you know? So this time they got more people of the United States, non-Indians, helping the regular Native American people than Peabody Corporation. But Peabody Corporation has big bucks, and a couple senators quit being a senator and joined forces with Peabody, so they got money backing them. So it's a big mess out there. You just don't read about it because it never hit the paper. But that's going on right now.
I was going to say, go ahead, Jason.
Indians is always like looking for these, like, you know, issues to like get people fired up and riled up about. I mean, you're exactly right, man. Why not this? How can this be ignored? But like I said, that Ted Bundy guy gets every nut job with a gun going up there to support him.
Because Native Americans, we've learned, don't matter.
Okay.
Well,
right,
when I was a cop
right
on the force here and all kinds of stuff, hit the fan, we couldn't say nothing to the reporters for several reasons. One, it would ruin the investigation. Two, it would panic the people, and they would go out and try to take the law in their own hands. You know, this is in police work. Now, look at it the other way around. Suppose you're out there, let's say Arizona, defending your land, and all of a sudden the word gets out, how many people is going to side up with the Peabody Corporation, and how many people is going to side up with the Native Americans, okay? Then you'll have a big civil war in your hands. And there's not enough law enforcement to cover that war, plus all the other problems around the country and overseas.
Yeah.
You know, that actually would be kind of an interesting standoff. You have, like, what I would consider the righteous will of the people versus an unlimited bankroll of corporate money. So we'll have to see how that one would play out.
Yeah, it's going to take a while, but, you know, look at Broken Rainbow, and you'll get the picture, and just keep up with it, because one of the stories on the bottom, you can write for updates, and they send you the updates, what's going on, you know, like that.
Okay. Hey, Cop, I found it. It was Geronimo.
Geronimo, okay. He was
Geronimo.
Not a chief.
Huh?
Geronimo was not a chief. Now, don't get that confused with Sitting Bull or...
Yeah.
It was
but
like a medicine.
But Geronimo fought the government big time down in, I think, Arizona or Mexico, somewhere down there.
Yeah, he went down through there in that area, right?
Yeah. And then
and
they took him.
7,000 soldiers to get him out of the cave.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, Geronimo was like, was really, if you ask me, man, he fought.
I know, but see, he was more wise than anybody. He had the wisdom. He knew exactly how, let's say, the white man reacted. And they knew that if they do something more, there are going to be more tribes up against the army. Now, here's something to think about. Back in the 18th century, the army consisted of immigrants from overseas, which half of them couldn't even talk English. So they had a big communication gap. You had people talking English trying to give commands to somebody that don't understand English. This is one of the problems they had. And it just kept on going, getting worse and worse. And this is what caused a lot of killings. If somebody said, stop, they would shoot. You know, so that's one of the problems. But there's an old saying that, remember, you can fight better in your own backyard than you can somewhere else.
That is true. Nobody can run through. Nobody can quite move through my backwoods that I know like the back of my hand, like me. But on that, we have actually come up on break. Might have gone a little bit over, but oh well.
Okay.
And we'll see y'all back here, and we're gonna play a song or two, plug some shows, and we'll be right back at you.
All right. Later.
Hey, cop. You can hang out.
Paranormal, ghosts,
spirits,
demons,
reincarnation,
past lives,
the afterlife,
divination,
exorcisms,
witchcraft,
the unseen.
He's psychic medium Chris George.
And he's Victor the Voice Berman.
We are Second Sight Radio. Join us live
every Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time
on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our three-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
If you are listening to the show and wish to join us in the chat room, visit paltalk.com. Go to the social issues, select other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Tune in to the Mind Cemetery with your hosts, Chip and Nicole, every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
All right, everybody, and welcome back to the second hour. Me and Heather are still here with you, and Top decided to hang on with us because he's an intelligent man with a lot to say. So how you guys doing?
Doing pretty good here, waiting for the storm to hit any time.
Yeah, we had ours yesterday, but I sent it down towards Joe, and it's kind of getting there, so.
You're the one that's setting up the storms, huh? I'm going to have to send you the cleanup bill.
Actually, man, I'm trying to keep them all here because, I mean, we really need the rain real bad.
Yeah, rain would be nice. I forgot what it looks like.
You know, if it keeps raining like this, the pecan trees might actually make pecans this year. They haven't done that in, like, 5 or 6.
You know, when we were talking about massacres over in Vietnam and Cambodia, there was a lot of massacres.
Yeah,
that's in the history book. I mean, they were killing people left and right, over like 1.5 million people. You know, it's their leader, I forget his name offhand. You know, it's like every country around the world has a massacre. You know, it isn't just us here. But if you look into the history.
Oh, yeah, there's slaughters all over the place.
Yeah.
One group doesn't like the other group, we'll just annihilate the other group. That's kind of how it goes. We don't like you, we're going to shoot you. We're going to get rid of you.
Modern slaughter and genocide seems a little bit smaller nowadays. I mean, compared to back in the day, I mean, there are entire civilizations and people that are wiped out. I mean, well, they're still trying to do it today, but they guess you just can't get away with it like you used to.
But they don't have to use weapons now. All they have to do is use a disease.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say.
Or the water.
Use the FDA.
Yeah.
Well, they don't have to do that. They can break virtually anybody. I mean, just economically. I mean, any number of things.
Yeah, it's kind of scary.
Nowadays. You know, it's like, look at all these children coming over here. And a lot of them has chicken pops, TB, this, that, the other. And what I was told, they're burning the blankets. As soon as they leave somewhere, they're burning whatever they touch. They're not washing them.
Jeez.
Huh. I know, you know, like, with, like, a lot of the immigration, I mean, I watched a little bit of Fox and MSNBC, and MSNBC will just not drop the whole immigration thing. They are more or less toting the bandwagon that if you're against illegal immigration, you don't like kids. You want these kids to die. And it's like, come on, MSNBC, you can make up better arguments than that.
Yeah, I never pay attention to news because they don't report the news accurate. The only way you're going to find the truth is be there or know somebody that you know personally that was there and get the facts from, you know, him or her. That's their only way. I don't trust no reporters at all.
Now, like with a lot of the turmoil and everything that's going on, Cobb, let me ask you a hypothetical situation. If you were still on the force, and what would you do if you were ordered to crack down hard on, you know, like a peaceful protest or something like that? I mean,
first on a big, gigantic protest. I wouldn't take an M60 out and mow them down. No. I would use a fire hose and say, what is it, 4,000 pounds per square inch? I think that would knock them on their butt for a while. But the only thing is, how do you know that somebody in that crowd don't have a weapon to fire back? Now, suppose the guy's in the middle of that crowd shooting. Now, you got to have snipers up on the roof of the scope looking for anything like that, crack shot. But for you to hit that person in the crowd, you got to be real, real, real good because the crowd is moving around, you know. So the only thing is you use water first, then tear gas, or both.
I mean, that sounds like, I mean, that's a serious tinderbox situation that, I mean, the police are there, you know, already amped up and there's a lot of tension going on. I mean, it could be something like, you know, somebody reaches for a cell phone and pulls it out of his jacket pocket and the shot goes off.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that happen once. But now in the riot, a guy pulled something out and the cop fired his weapon. And when it went to court, yeah, of course, he got sued, the city got sued, but, you know, then they washed it underneath the blanket, let's say, you know. But they're saying, I didn't see the guy's hands, all I seen was him reaching for something, you know. So mistakes are made, you know, mistakes happen, let's face it. Nobody's perfect. And the only way to cure the problem, you got to have triple amount of manpower for what's out there. That's the only way you can control it.
Now, well, let me run this one by. This is an interesting story that I read. One of the CopWatch sites posted this one, but there was a detective down in Miami. And he was fired from the force last year because he tested positive for cocaine in his system. Well, he disputed that, and this is what I think is funny. This is the guy's story. He said the reason that he got cocaine in his system, because he has never snorted a line or touched the stuff ever once in his life, was he said that his friend did some work for an old Cuban man who gave him some mysterious, like, sexual performance cream. And his friend gave him this cream that probably had cocaine in him, and he didn't have it to test. And he said that's why he had cocaine in his system. That sounds a little facetious to me, but anyway, they gave this guy his job back in a year's back pay. And I don't know, man. I mean, just me. I'm not one of those people. It's like if Joe comes up to me and he's like, hey, dude, I got some penis cream from, you know, this old guy we did some cabinet work for, man. You want to have a go with it? I'm not going to be like, sure, can't hurt.
Well, all they had to do is test the cream. Take it and test it, examine that. That's all they had to do. And then go from there and take blood tests and urine tests and whatever. And he has a case because anybody can mix something up and then tell you to take it if you wanted to take it. You know, you get it once it's in your system. You know, so it varies. So all they had to do was
reading about like the case. I mean, they said that they didn't have any of the cream, and it was all a word of mouth thing. So,
as he said, you know, it's one of those arguments. Well, a good lawyer can get his job back and go from there because there's no proof except in his system, and all you had to do is go find the person with the cream and bring him forward. That's all it's all about.
Yeah, if they could have found the guy, but, I mean, they didn't even have the cream and they didn't find him, but, you know, oh, well, maybe this guy did get unlucky and he deserved an okay break, you know. I guess, you know, more power to him. I do have to say,
I've just seen a Camden cop who was teaching at college. He's retired, just lost his job teaching college because he was dating a 18-year-old girl, and the college found out about it. He not just lost his teaching license, but now he's going to be paying a heavy fine and maybe his retirement pay. You know, so once you retire, you're still in good shape. You better be good because they can take part of your pension.
Oh, you never hear about that. Huh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
You know, there's a lot of things you don't hear about. I would say two-thirds. When you're on the police force, you know, you could be number one, you know, really good shoes. Only 2% of the cops turn bad. But everybody gets a bad rap for it. Just because this guy turned bad, all of a sudden you're getting a rap for it because you're a cop. And you knew that guy. Well, you're not with him 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Maybe you see him on the patrol here and there, you know, but that's it. So everybody's getting a bad rap because a couple people went nuts. fact, they just locked up six cops in Philadelphia this week for kidnapping, money laundering, and everything else.
Holy cow.
Yeah, well, this little town, Oakwood, Texas, population 471. I mean, we've never had a police department. We're just like a little pimple on Highway 79 between no two important particular points at all. And, you know, if we need help, we have to call Centerville, and it might take some, I mean, it might be a 45-minute drive before they can get here and render any kind of aid at all. Well, we finally decided we needed a police department a few years ago. And they went out and hired this guy, and they really didn't do any kind of proper background checks, but basically they hired a 30-year-old cop as our new chief of police. And looking at this guy's background in retrospect, he's one of those officers that in his law enforcement course, I mean the course of his law enforcement career of 4 years, he worked for six different police departments and, you know, basically bounced back and forth. He didn't work at any place longer than 6 months at any point in time. Well, he becomes our officer here, and I'm noticing he's enforcing the highway a little bit too, like, judiciously. I mean, there are, like, a couple of times that I've seen him, and it was always two black guys that get pulled over on this one point in the road, and while he's searching their car and stuff, he's got them handcuffed to each other around a telephone pole. And I'm like, I don't think that's standard operating procedure. Well, and there were, like, a couple of rumors that this guy had, you know, roughed up a couple of local people, and there were actually a couple of sentiments about it. But what did this guy in was he had his wife, he moved his wife into town, and what he was actually doing is he was holding his wife hostage and not allowing her to contact anybody else. I mean, he was beating her. He was tasing her. What happened was he decided he needed to go out of town for one night, and his wife got out and made it to her mother's house. And, I mean, it was bad. She was bruised, beaten all over. They found something like 22 taser electrode marks on this woman's body. And he was basically holding her hostage and had been beating her for a couple of years until he finally got out. And, I mean, once it got out, the Texas Rangers had enough of that. I mean, they sent Walker Texas Ranger after this guy, and they caught him in the next town over. And, I mean, I'm just kind of wondering how they let a guy, like, slip through the system like that and go back and forth between all these agencies. I mean, you take a look at anybody's resume, and if they float from job to job every couple of months, I mean, I don't think I would make them the police chief and put them in charge of public safety.
Well, I would get rid of him because, number one, it's against the law to handcuff somebody to the pole, because if he had somebody come up the pole and hit him, they just killed the two prisoners, whatever. But every time I took people out of the car and I wasn't sure I would cuff them for my safety, but not around the pole, I had them up against the car just for me checking a few things in the car. Then I would release them. But if I found something, guess what? They're already cuffed. So that's one step I didn't have to do. But see, sometimes you have to cuff for your safety. You have to use that decision, but not around a pole. Now, if you got two or three people and you're by yourself, if you got another cop, you call for backup. Because one guy might not handle three, especially a rookie. So you got a split second to make a decision on a lot of things. But you don't use deadly force. Or that's last resort. You use the mace, the baton, and then the last resort, the deadly force. This is the way you're trained. But a lot of times these new rookies, they pull out the weapon, think they're wired up, and it doesn't work that way. You know, so that's where you got to be careful. You know?
And I mean, that's like the local Leon County cops. I mean, I mean those guys are actually okay. I mean, they've got a huge county to cover. There's not that many of them, and there's only 14,000 people here. I mean, it's not exactly a rich county. And I've asked them about, you know, what happened with our first Oakwood cop, and they basically all were like, I mean, that guy's just scared. He should have been in an entirely different line of work. And I pretty much have to agree with their opinion on it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you're right, man. It just takes, like, one, like, ego power tripper that's in it just for the control they can exert on other people like that to make everybody look bad.
That's right. Exactly. Just like anything else. It's like if you went into the store and you bought something that was no good, what are you going to do? Don't go to that store. Yeah, I got ripped off for this. Well, it's the same thing as more of a cop because they get the bad rap. Then you hear about Montier Fire Companies, where you get a bunch of people from a Montier Fire Company going around setting a fire for them to go out and put a fire out, you know? So now they're getting a bad rap. So everything there is in life, if somebody does something bad, everybody else suffers. It doesn't matter what it is, really.
Yeah, I think you're true about that. I mean, even in, like, the UFO community, I mean, there are some good researchers out there, but there are other ones that are just selling complete and utter crap. I mean, you're right about that. I mean, even in the news, there's news and then there's somebody's propaganda, and you just get tired of trying to filter the news from the crap.
You know, talking about UFOs and ETs and all, when I listen to Joe about that abduction and all this, this happened. I bump into that kid again. He's about 14 years old, not too long ago, and told me about he got abducted by aliens. So I sat him down and I listened to everything he said. When I listen to Joe talk and he has certain guests on, it's the same story. Here's a 14-year-old kid that's over here that does not know Joe or anybody that comes on the show saying the same thing that this guy, what Joe's saying. And I'm just shaking my head. I said, how can this be? How can he be abducted over here, which is two towns away from me? You know, I bumped into him doing my job. And here Joe and his guests talked about the same thing. You know, I just, wow, it's incredible in this.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, we're not all making it up either. I mean,
yeah, you know, when you...
Me, there's no, I mean, you have no reason to. I mean, why would you want to come out with something like that when you could be ridiculed? There's no reason to.
I asked the kid a couple questions because I remember what Joe said, and he said the same thing, and he said he went through here, he did this, so I said, describe this. He described an E.T., and then when Joe said something about a gray, I said, wait a minute, which one? And, you know, now I'm all confused because
yeah, there's
so many
ones.
Of them.
Yeah.
He said the same thing what Joe was saying. So I know the kid wasn't just making it up after I listened to Joe's show and everything else. I'm going to try to get him. He has a computer. I'm going to try to get him in a Pal Talk. And I gave him the Pal Talk how to get into it and get in this room. Maybe he could talk to Joe and everybody. He's like 14
yeah.
or 15.
Actually, if he can't get a hold of Joe, I mean, he could talk to any one of us at IGAR.
Yeah. But when my sister didn't believe in UFOs, and one night I looked up and seen the orbs, I called her out. I said, now explain that to me. She seen that. I says, Jean, I said, you're a proud witness of a UFO now. Congratulations.
Well, I've been in Nevada, and I've been seeing lots of, well, the last year I've been seeing crazy stuff in the sky. So, yeah, especially the last couple of months I've been seeing crazy crap. I'm going, okay, I don't know. All my stuff is changing.
Well, you know, Copham, actually, the very first case I ever looked into for ICAR, it was a Native American case. This came out of the, we got an email from a lady. She was on the Nez Perce Reservation up in Idaho. And basically what had happened is there was a sighting with that she had witnessed. I mean, there were like, I think there were about 8 witnesses to a glowing, like, rounded craft that had landed or appeared to be, like, it had either landed or was hovering really close to the ground across a valley from them on the side of the hill. All that, I mean, two of the witnesses, has actually decided to talk to me about it. And I mean, two of the other witnesses were actually like tribal police officers. So I just always thought that was interesting. And I mean, there's actually quite a connection between extraterrestrials and a lot of the Native American history and mythologies, if you look at it.
Yeah, just like Bigfoot, you know, I listen to all these stories and I just shake my head. A lot of tribes swear they've seen it. A lot of people say they've seen it. But I'm saying, no, I'm skeptical on that because of one reason. With all the high technology that we have from ground all the way to space, how come we can't spot it? And how come recently I hear, oh, we got a Bigfoot in New Jersey. We got a Bigfoot in Delaware. We got one over here. I said, wait a minute. Now it's getting too far-fetched. You know, now when you count everybody who's seen one, out of 50 states, now you got about 30 that said they saw Bigfoot. And with all the high technology, how come we can't spot one?
Well, you know, you got a good point about the technology. I mean, especially with, like, the cartel having like, marijuana grow operations in a lot of the national forests. You know damn good and well that they're putting the FLIR camera on a Cessna, and they're basically combing the woods looking for that infrared signature. And you would think, I mean, statistically, they would have to come across a Sasquatch or something like that walking around and, I mean, at least have some documentation of them, right?
True. Even with the footprints they dig up, right? How do you know somebody didn't make it there? Like, all right, like, I'll give you an example. I made I carved something out with a rope on it. And I can do a crop circle without my footprints on it. And all it was I took 2 4x4s, 4 feet long, carved it into like an oblong round end, you know, all around 2 inches, put holes through it, put a rope on it, put another handle to it, put my feet on it, and walked it, and actually brought down the grass. And that's the same thing you can do with a crop circle.
Yeah, I've done the same thing with a 2x4 and a stake through one end of it in the dirt, you know.
Well, if you make it round, the square marks won't show up. They'll know it's done. But if you made it round, you won't see no marks on the plant. You follow me? So that's the way you do it.
Hmm.
So there's a lot of things that's skeptical, but yet there's a lot of things that's reality, you know. So it gets 50-50.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, Cop, I have a question on what's your take on the whole Redskins thing back in Washington?
My opinion on what?
The Redskins?
Yeah.
Having the Redskins name? I'm just curious.
My opinion? Well, I could go either way. First of all, the name's been around for years and years, okay? There's only a few Native Americans that complained about it. If you, for me, why don't you leave it alone and just give me the money you're using it for us and give it to the tribe? You know, you're discriminating us against the skin, so I'll make a deal with you. You can use it, but give me some percentage money you're making on a football game and feed our kids on the reservation.
That's an idea.
Yeah, why don't they do it that way? Because there was a lot of Native Americans that played football, and they never said one word about that name. It was only a small percentage, and now it just got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah. Because my high school back in Colorado and Arvada, we were the Redskins up until my senior year, and there was a group of Native American parents that complained, and we ended up dropping the name. So, yeah.
You know what it would cost for them to drop the name and redo everything? Millions of dollars, you know? Redo everything.
Yeah.
The patent and trade office refused to renew the trademark on, you know, the Washington Redskins name, so.
Yeah, I mean, they can. Yeah, exactly.
It's a Redskins t-shirt right now, and there's not a damn thing they can do about it.
Well, I'll tell you what, if they do change into a different name, anything that you have on Redskins will be a collector's item and be worth money in the future. because you never see it again. You know, it'll be like an antique 50 years down the road. You know,
well,
like this.
You know, actually, Cop, I got some old Houston Oiler stuff I'm hanging on to.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, I forgot about the Oilers.
You know, the Oilers moving and eventually becoming the Titans, right? And, you know, once we got the Texans, it was always kind of funny because you'll be driving through Houston and you'll see about, for a little while there, you saw about a 50-50 mix of, you know, Titan stickers from people still following the old Oilers and then the new Texans fans.
Why don't you tell Joe to call up? He's sitting there being quiet, too. I've been doing the conversation.
Yeah, Joe, call on in, man. You got, like, 25 minutes to get all the, like, cursing and non-G-rated stuff. Oh, man, we never gave the disclaimer before the show, did we? That's your fault anyway, Joe. You were supposed to do that.
Yeah, well, he's busy there with them white Russians, you know that. He had the lights out. He went and got more white Russians for refills. Now he has the lights on.
Oh, jeez.
I got stoned today with a couple of yellow jackets. I said, oh, man, that's it. So I took a gallon of gas, dumped it on the ground, and lit a match.
There you go.
Yeah. You don't mess around with an Indian.
I thought I had an agreement with, like, Red Wasp and the Yellow Jackets around here, and we got a bunch. They're everywhere. It's like, for 33 years, I mean, they and I had an agreement until one just stung me for absolutely no damn reason at all. Then his homeboy stung me twice, and since then the war has been on. I got some Yellow Jackets yesterday, and I went to pull the starter on a 7-horsepower Briggs & Stratton motor, and right before I pulled it, I noticed there was a Red Wasp nest right there on the muffler, so I almost kind of screwed up there.
And in fact, today when I was out, I seen a flight of jets, I think they were F-18 flying over, a squad of the jets out of McGuire. And they were in a mighty hurry because they were aiming southwest direction from where I was. So that means they were going toward Delaware, Virginia, or Maryland, somewhere out that way. They were in a mighty hurry. And they were low, too. They were only up 3,000 feet. So something happened.
You know, that's weird. The other day, a single F-18, day before yesterday, an F-18, I mean, I happened to be outside and actually caught this one. It buzzed by, I mean, really low, and We don't win. And again.
We're on it. Yeah.
We are echoing into the world of the darkness.
I've got the spirit up through without command.
I feel like it's Halloween in July. Oh, we're not. Hey, ladies, we're just playing with the echo that we all hear and y'all don't. So y'all are like, why are these guys weird and that's so bad? We have a self-leveling equalizer. There's three of them. And they balance out. It takes them about 15, 20 seconds. But it makes our audio much clearer and much better than most places these days. But it's still, it's a little irritating when it first comes on.
Yeah, but still people listening to this archive are going to be like, okay, what the hell are these people smoking?
Good shit. Share that stuff. Actually, this comes from Colorado. It's Colorado Blue. I got to say, it's better than the Oregon Blue. Not as good as the Hawaiian Blue, but, you know, not bad. Everybody's like, quiet, shh, what the hell is he talking about?
That's not G-rated.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, no, you said it is G-rated because I didn't say what I was talking about. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you don't need to know what I'm talking about. And if you do, well, enjoy. And we'll leave it at that. No, it just, you know, I think what was Greece was number three. Jamaica was on the list.
Jamaica, man.
Yeah, see, Greece was number three. Jamaica was number two. And then, of course, who wants to guess what number one is? Come on, yeah, this is easy.
Haiti?
No. If you think about it, it's a current crisis country. So, well, Haiti is actually a current crisis. Bigger crisis than that one.
Palestine?
Any country in Africa that's got an Ebola outbreak going on, most countries in the Middle East.
I would have kind of thought one of them, but actually it's
there's a lot of candidates for this one, man.
It's the Ukraine. They figure Ukraine will be bankrupt before the end of the year the way things are going.
Yeah, I've read that, yeah.
But with all that money we're putting into Ukraine, how is it going to get bankrupt?
Well, not yet, but we are going to. I know we only sent them like $28 million just recently, but we're still going to start sending them like $2 billion. I think the EU is now. I got to ask, while we're on this subject, this has been bothering me. So we've got troops.
But here's the thing, dude. All the money in the world doesn't help Ukraine if the Russians don't sell them gas.
Well, I think they might do an end run on that. Some deal.
Actually, what they say that Ukraine has been doing is they've been siphoning off gas shipments that are just passing through and stockpiling it.
Probably, probably. And if the reach chain gets desperate, I know there's a pipeline that far from there. They'll go tap that bitch. But what I'm worried more about is that the EU's going to have people there pretty soon, troops. Not a lot, just a few, just like we've got a few there. But I'm worried, what happens if a Russian soldier kills an American soldier? I mean, we're already basically, technically, at a Cold War status over the nuclear missiles that supposedly Russia has mid-range nuke missiles, which is, man, a big violation of the SALT II Treaty. That's technically an act of war. So we're already kind of teetering there, and then they go kill one of our people. This could get messy fast. Everybody's worried about the Middle East because that's where they say the big next war is going to start and blood up to horses' bridle and shit. And it may end up there.
Well, you know, actually, man, right before the show, I read a little piece of information about how the war is heating up. That initial reports are saying that Russian separatists ambushed something like 20 Ukrainian soldiers and killed them.
Yeah, see, this is going to get, you know, if this don't get under control, this could get nasty fast.
Yo, this is exactly what I think is going to happen. Is Putin is going back to the old ways of the world? He's going to start his little ruckus, which he already has. He's already got Crimea, dude. He's going back to the old ways. He's going to end up suing for peace, more or less. And everybody will say, oh, if we won, everything's cool.
Yeah, but see, the UN is a joke. They're not really doing anything and nothing. They're sitting there on their butts just talking.
There's not much Ukraine can do without doing something really serious or something really stupid. Frankly, you know, Ukraine population-wise may only be 80 million smaller than Russia, but military-wise, Russia's got them outgunned everywhere they go. I mean, there's not a shot. I mean, if Russia really wanted to, they got 12,000 troops, I think, stationed 10 miles or 15 miles from the border. Before the Ukraine could even do things, they would roll halfway across the Ukraine without some kind of assistance from a real military like the EU's or, well, more like the Americans, because even the EU don't have a real military anymore. It's I guess we're going to have to get NATO involved. We're going to have to send NATO troops and NATO tanks. NATO guns, NATO boots. I say we cut off the Black Sea port right there. That should be part of the sanction. Just cut that son of a bitch off. Cut off that pipeline leaving out the Black Sea, and I bet you Putin's nuts swell the size of somebody's head, and I bet you starts changing his mind. Because, look, his billionaires are
already... Don't you think, Joe, that Russia has a lot of stockpile and oil and gas somewhere on the ground?
Actually, Russia's like the United States in the fact that it has a large amount of minerals and a large amount of fuel and stockpile. Both of us can sustain our countries, both food-wise. Russia's going to have a little harder time with the food than we are because they got a little harsher winters. And if
do you know how much of Russia that Stalin converted into farmland, dude? They've got so much farmland it's not even funny.
Yeah, but they don't. It's not really like we have. It's not that rich Mississippi Delta farmland that produces ungodly bountifuls of food, or that Amazon farm. It's not like that. It's that European farmland that's been being used for 10,000 years, was used as a forest, then used as a farm, then used as a forest. That shit's, there's not really any good land anywhere in Europe, China. None of that shit's like we have over here. It's not going to produce the kind of the levels. And then it's not so much, and wait a minute, you're not even thinking about this. If we start cutting everybody off, China's going to start starving in under 6 months, and Russia's the most likely target for them, whether they're friends or not. I mean, come on. If you're going to expand, China trying to expand in Europe is suicide. It'll be a global epic war. It's just not going to happen. But
Hitler
might start a war, but, I mean, they're not just going to roll over them. But they have a good chance of just rolling into Russia before Russia can even stop them, especially if Russia's busy screwing around with the Ukraine or somebody or the Americans. Russia's playing a dangerous game here, and they're not that stable of a country yet. They're not that far out of bankruptcy that they can't be pulled back into it. And Putin, unfortunately, and I got to give this guy credit today, he said, well, we've done it now. He said, maybe there might have been a shot we could have let Putin down. He's now we slapped these sanctions on him. He can't back down. He said he's going to have to do something with the Ukraine. We done backed him. Unless his money backers start pulling out, which some of them already started doing, we're going to force his hand if we're not careful here. Obama's not the best negotiator when it comes to assholes. He don't know how to deal with them because he's one himself.
Nobody in the world knows how to deal with a genuine asshole like Putin. And you know what kind of respect?
Yeah, baby, I know who could have dealt with him. Bush could have dealt with him. He wouldn't have done this shit with Bush. He didn't even want to be in office. Remember, he could have went when Medvedev won. He didn't even want to be in office when Bush was there because he knows Bush and Condoleezza Rice wasn't going to tolerate this shit at all. We'd have been nasty.
No, nobody is scared of Condi.
All over. Everybody's
scared. I know.
Even Zink said.
Nobody is scared
of Condi. The best one we've ever had.
Condi is that gap between her teeth.
No, they loved her, baby. They loved her. She was a scary bitch. And only because, Clinton could have been a scary bitch, but Obama don't have any balls. Bush got balls the size of the White House. So when Condi said, you know what, Mr. Zing, you're going to give us a plane back, you're going to give us a people back, or you know what, next week we're going to be raining bombs on your effing head, they knew it's true. They
you
knew
there
would be bombs raining on their effing head the following week. There was no doubt about that. Bush was a man of his word, and he wasn't going to back down. Obama is not. He will back down almost every so well so far. Come on, he let the Muslim Brotherhood have Egypt.
You know what's scary, man, is I never thought I would actually say this, but I mean, I wish Hillary was still Secretary of State, dude,
Oh god, yes.
I mean, compared to John Kerry, I mean, come on, Miss Captain.
Kerry basically tried to give Israel to the Palestinians last week. Now, you know, I'm not pro Israel because frankly I think we give them way too much. And I don't think we get much in return for what we give them. But Kerry just...
And then again, though, dude, with Kerry, man, I mean, that is kind of lame. Because Kerry did try to play up that whole I was in Vietnam thing. And he was basically the guy that the song Fortunate Son was written about.
he talked about going against the war. After he was in Nam, came back, went up to Congress, and said, look, you're wasting your time. I'm against the war. And yeah, he gave a big speech in Washington. His attitude changed from being a GI to going against the war. And now a lot of veterans are against him because the way he mouthed off is actually going against the veterans. Just like Jane Fonda.
Well, here's a good topic for this late in the show, but what do y'all think of that whole Jesse Ventura mess that's going on right now?
I've only heard a little bit about that. Y'all have to bring me up on that. Well,
that's all right,
everybody shut up.
in over a week.
All right, man. Marine sniper, you know, the deadliest SEAL sniper, whatever his name is, Chris something. He was, like, the deadliest sniper in the world. He wrote a book. And part of his book,
He
said that they were at some SEAL reunion, and they were just talking about something. Yeah, Chris Kyle, thank you, Alice. That they were talking about something, and Jesse Ventura said this. He said, well, due to our involvement in Iraq, the SEALs deserve to lose a few. And so then he says he supposedly knocked Jesse Ventura the beep out. And, you know, he never said who it was. He just said, like, a prominent, like, ex-SEAL he knocked out. But then, like, sometime later, after his book sold a bunch of copies, he said, yeah, that was Jesse Ventura. And Jesse Ventura said, that crap never happened. You know, I'm taking you to court. And, well, we all know what happened to Chris Kyle. He was out at the shooting range with somebody suffering from PTSD and ended up getting shot. And he died. And so the lawsuit proceeded against his estate and against the publishers of the book. And that's who's actually paying this money out, are the publishers of the book, because they're the ones that committed the slander. And, of course, the estate had to be added to it. But the reaction about this is actually going crazy. I mean, the Tea Party, these supposedly libertarians that are supposed to be, like, you know, not caring about things like this, they're all basically trying to slander Jesse Ventura and saying that, you know, how can you sue a dead, like, serviceman's wife? I mean, that's shady, but, I mean, what was in the book was slander. I mean, all of the people that they called to testify, you know, for the defense to say that nobody said they ever saw the guy hit him. They said they saw a ruckus, and one guy said he saw him at 4 o'clock. Another guy said they saw him at 5 o'clock when it happened. Ventura's like, I got a receipt. I didn't pick up my rental car until 7:30. The owner of the bar said he didn't see it happen, and I don't know. That's just, like, kind of bad timing for him.
Is what the guy, he said, type situation. They're going to end up dropping it.
And of course it's easy to hate on Jesse Ventura anyway, because, I mean, that's one of the biggest criticisms is, well, he's into that crazy conspiracy theory shit anyway. Yeah, it's like, you know, just one of those stories out there.
Yep.
I mean, but then again, Joe, I mean, all right, this would be like me writing a book that sells a million copies, and in part of it was I write about that time that I knocked Joe Smooth the bleep out in a bar in Metairie in 1997. I mean, I think Joe should sue me for that.
Hey, well, if he can get the money. I know, well, I thought I seen he got some money for that. I think a nice chunk of money for that, too. Wasn't like 1.98 or something, 1.4?
Yeah, Eight, I believe. I think it was 1.8. I mean, he was asking more, but
because somebody talks smack about you. I mean, well, I guess, you know, yeah, that's pretty rough saying you knocked somebody out if you didn't.
Well, it was supposed to have made like his estate was supposed to have made like $6 million off of this book too.
Oh, was he? Well, he should have just waited for Jesse to come out of club one night, and knock his dumb ass out, and say, "Well, see, look, I knocked you out again," and then play taking the court. Well, Yanni, yeah, I did knock him out, but I was just trying to prove a point, you know.
Hey, Joe, here's what my father told me about Ukraine. During World War II, when Germany was coming and taking over Ukraine, they were fighting against Germany. But then when Russia started coming forward to take over Ukraine and fight the Germans, Ukraine sided up with the Germans to kill the Russians because they didn't want no parts of the Russians. And then they hated them. So when the Germans are on one side killing the Russians, they were not the Germans. That's what happened during the war.
That is a big part of history that everybody glosses over and doesn't explain when they're talking about the Ukraine crisis. It's like you said, man, I mean, just what happened in World War II. And even before that, I mean, Ukraine doesn't have any reason to love any of its neighbors. They've been screwed over by everybody, every party here.
Well, it's like
the only country in the world that attacked and landed up on most countries is England. If you go way back, England is the only country in the world that attack more countries than anybody else.
Because England's badass, man. And they only left us alone because they just got tired of messing with us. I guess they figured, well, we don't have to conquer them. We can get them a different way.
Well, and they also were going bankrupt with money.
Yeah. But they realized there was no reason to take us. Eventually, we would come home. They knew it. Just see, that's the thing about the UK. And this is what I was trying to get across the other. There's some kind of weird sickness with these guys, okay? It's like, and I've heard Canadians say this, I've heard Australians say this, I've heard Indians say this, I've actually heard other countries say this. I've even heard some freaking people at the Falklands say this. It's like going home. It's like being part of a bigger family. And when you really think about living on this planet today, knowing you've got a family of about two and a half billion does make you feel a little bit more secure, which half of them bitches have nukes. So it does make you, because, you know, we have big enemies these days. I mean, if Russia and China decide to keep up, it's going to be a hell of a war.
And, you know, I'll get into an episode of watching Top Gear, and I'll be damned if I don't feel proud to be British somehow.
That's what I'm telling you, man, Doctor Who, you know. I mean, come on, I just, you know, it's like, you know, the Brits come here and get big, we go over there and get big. It's something the two countries share. Now, we're not quite, you know, we're not a commonwealth of the British. We consider ourselves to be king of America. even with the emperor in the White House right now, we do consider us, she's the queen, we the king.
I think I'm going to give everybody a canoe that's not an Indian and have them paddle out of this country. One way I can get my land back.
Well, I was arguing with a friend of mine over there the other day, and he's going on. And I said, dude, you're arguing about fighting with the U.S.? Come on, man. I said, what, you got four boats? Five nukes? What the hell? Come on. I said, who do you think's been protecting you for the last 40 years? Get the hell out of here. I'm like, what are you? Cause I told him, I said, look, that British must be better than this American shit is, because, man, I'm telling you what. I'm like, dude, even if the EU back, you get your ass kicked. I'm thinking, right now, we a lean, mean fighting machine. We've got 40 years now of continuous wars with trained soldiers and proven military equipment. We're not a good people to screw with. We're just not. I mean, if we had to really field a real war, like World War II style war, big war, there would be nobody on the planet to match for us right now. They just wouldn't.
I don't know if we could do it anymore like World War II, though, Joe.
The only reason, Jason, and this is the only reason we could, and if this would have been 8 years ago under the Uncle Bush, we couldn't have, because almost all manufacturing had almost disappeared out of the United States.
We cannot do what we did in World War II anymore. I mean, look at it this way. General Motors cannot make an ignition switch that can't kill people, okay?
You're
going to be able to retool and start making M1s out the butt glue.
And wait, you forget, we also have Japanese plants in all the United States now. That's what everybody forgot. In the last 8 years... Since three years of Bush's last term up until now, there's been a mass move of manufacturing back to the United States. And you know why? It's cost effective versus how good the product is. Everybody was going to India and China because it was so cheap. But then the shit was falling apart, people were getting sued, kids were eating lead paint. So then they decided, you know what? The product may cost a little bit more coming out to the United States, but the bitch is gonna stay there. At least with the exception of GM. I'm sorry, guys. I used to like GM trucks. You know, I'm a big Ford fan. I used to like GM trucks and a couple of GM cars like the Vette and maybe one type, the Z28 or something. But today they're just a piece of crap. All right? But Chrysler and Ford could produce a good line of vehicles for the military. And besides, I never liked the Hummer. I always thought the Hummer was an overweighted piece of crap.
It is.
It would sink in the first mud pile it got into. And
I just—I like the open Jeep.
V10 with no gas. I mean, what kind of this was like the big boys' club, man. I mean, come on. Jeeps are supposed to be, you know, efficient and fuel efficient, because sometimes you got to go a long ways on a tank of fuel.
Well, Joe, we don't even run Hummers anymore, dude. We're running those giant like MRAPs, which are basically 2.5-ton trucks, and we're using them as Jeeps.
Ford has got a new. They call it overland vehicle. It's a four-wheel drive, but it's a different type. And I seen Chrysler's going to offer one this year to the military, too. These are smaller. One's got a six-cylinder in it. One's got a small V8 in it. High-powered, mind you. They both produce pretty good. The V6 produces, I think, 275 horsepower, and I think the V8 produces about 325. So they got a little power under the hood, but they're all fuel-injected, and they got a couple of little features, like I guess probably along the lines of PI features or something. And I said they're a little fast. They got a little bit more power, and they're built by the right company. You can't kill a Ford engine, man. If you keep it clean and oiled up, that bitch will run until, I don't know, it'll outlive you if you let it.
Yeah,
I had a Ford truck with six-cylinder with 350,000 miles on it.
Now, you made it now that the car may rattle apart around you. But.
Yeah, Joe, but Ford's doing away with that, man. You know that, all right, dude, here's what, 2014 Ford's lineup was a 3.7-liter V6, a 3.5 turbo V6, a 5-liter, and a 6.2-liter. For the new 2015 F-150, they've jumped the base engine from a 3.7-liter down to a 3.5-liter. The engine that they're trying to replace the small V8 with is a 2.7 turbo V6. You can still get the 5-liter, but the EcoBoost is top of the line. I mean, you can't get the 6.2-liter or anything better than that anymore. And I don't know about that, man. I mean, like a big old 300 straight six that's kind of like under-tuned and... more or less never being overworked in its old life.
The only thing the 300 straight six is good for is pulling shit. I mean, they're not fast. They're just, and you know what? They're not Ford's best motor.
You're not going to win a race with a 300 straight six. But
no,
you're going to
own one. I got a 96 Ford F-150 sitting in my house. It needs a starter. Yeah. It's got a straight six. Man, talk about got torque. That bitch will give you whiplash taking off and stuff. But, I think when I'm pulling my big boat with it, I can't do over 70 damn thing overheats. And God help you if you got to pull it uphill. You got to go down to granny gear, man. Because, I mean, it's just a base engine for Ford. I mean, if you just want to drive around, it's fine for that. You want to do anything real? No. Go get something V6, V8, I don't know, something that's got some power to it. But Sam's got the V6 in his F-150. It runs pretty good. But he's also got the work version, so it's a little bit lighter than the Ford or King Cab. The King Cab's heavy.
I've got a 2007 Silverado with the little V8 that's got the 4.8 in it, and dude, it'll walk over any V6 like any day long. And in fact, that was the base motor for the Silverados. You had to option and like specify the 4.3 V6. By the time they killed it off.
Well, isn't that the model we took? I know we took the maroon F-50 at the time, but we also took a red or cherry red Silverado that had the small V8, and that's the one I went down sideways on a levee with. It's badass, actually, for a little. But you see, Silverados technically, they're just lighter than Fords are. The new Fords are more like, and not the work, not the 250s, but the 150s are more like. They're still rugged trucks, but they got way more pleasure qualities in them now than they used to. Especially the four doors. They got all that automatic soft ride and shit. I'm telling you what, I was riding in that big four. The one I'm thinking about buying, it rides better than my mom's new Cadillac does, baby. That thing is like, ooh, you don't hear nothing. You don't feel nothing. It's got power. It's got a big V8 on the hood. It gets up and goes when you step on it. It's got the overdrive in it. And actually, it's decent gas mileage. I'm like, yeah, and it's got the moon roof, it's got the sliding back window, the four seats for the dogs in the back. I'm like, shit, man, this truck is nice. This ain't the F-150 I grew up with, man.
No, I mean, you know what surprised me about the 2014, the newer Silverado, that new generation they just came out with, was I don't think it looked that different from, like, the previous Silverado, but I didn't think the Silverado looked that bad for the generation.
Yeah, nice truck.
But, man, it's like I got in that 2014 Silverado crew cab, and I closed the door, and it was like I was in a vacuum in a bank vault, dude. I mean, this truck was like S-Class Benz quiet. I mean, there could have been a firefight going off, and I wouldn't have known it until I opened the door.
That's just amazing
for a truck, man.
That's the nice things about the new truck. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Joe and Jason and Cop hour on the trucks.
You forgot Heather.
Heather said, "Are you a truck?" She wants a Jeep. Heather wants a Jeep. She says she wants a stinking truck. She wants a Jeep. And
yeah, that's what I'm saying this week.
What do you guys think about the Japanese engines, like from Honda, Toyota?
Yeah, all right, here's the truth about it, and take this guy a little bit of a If you want a four-cylinder engine that is going to be fun and is going to last a long time, buy a Honda. If you want a four-cylinder engine that's going to last a long time and be pretty much fun, buy a Toyota. Actually, like, going back to the GM thing, GM only does one thing good as far as I'm concerned. They make the best small block V8 on the planet. And it's in everything from a $17,000 Silverado to an $80,000 Corvette. And the thing about it is every other car that GM makes that doesn't have the small block V8 option is a piece of crap. But no, dude, Japanese, I mean, if you want bulletproof reliability, they're not going to make, like, a big block V8. So, I mean, just, like, don't even hope about that. But Japanese engines are very technical. They're usually rev happy, and they'll last you a quarter million miles. I've got one that's got 320 on it, a V18 and an Integra. And Joe remembers that car. He didn't think it would light those tires up like that.
Actually, it was a little good little car, man. I like that little car. I'd have liked to put a little turbocharger in that little bitch, but I don't think you could catch the damn thing on the ground with a turbo in it. Tires would have always wanted to be spinning on it.
The turbo Integra with sleeves, I mean, I could be driving around a 10-second car.
I think I'm probably going to end up buying me an F-150 this year and next year, but I really want a nice one. I want a four-door. I can't buy something brand new because I do construction, and frankly, I know one of them boys are going to hit my truck and scratch it or get paint on my seats, and then there's going to be a hell of a fight. So it would be better if it's a couple of years old. That way, if they do, I won't feel the need to, like, remove a body part.
Yeah, and we ended up, I know how you feel, Joe, because we ended up using my Integra as a work truck there for a while.
Well, come on, look, I got lucky, right? I pick up a 2009 Corolla, my stepfather passed away, so I kind of inherited the car. He paid $26,500 for a 2009 Toyota Corolla. I was stunned. I'm like, really? A Corolla?
For a Corolla, man, that's ridiculous. I can almost get in a BMW base Model 3 for that much.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, dude. It was paid $26,500. I was just stunned. So I picked up the car because I was, I think it was $11,000 owed on it. So I got a deal on the car. I had 25,000 miles on it. It was a year old. And it had 11 grand owed on it. So I paid it off. And it's a great little car. And it was brand new when I got it. The boys use it for work. You couldn't tell. That thing is so trashed inside, man. Every time I get in, I want to go punch somebody in the head. I'm like, Lord have mercy. But
being a contractor vehicle is a hard life for a
company. Yes. And it's always loaded down full. I just put new tires on, dude. It's always loaded down full of stuff. It's a great little car. I mean, I took it to New York. I took it out to Roswell. and for a little four banger, but he got some little. If you look, you'll see it if you ever see it. It's the reason it was 26 because the original one he looked at, well, I think it was 22. This one had some kind of add on. It had some kind of. It says on the thing, PI package included. You know what PI package is. So I'm like, what kind of PI package can you have on a four cylinder?
Who
was using
the PI package for Poland? Mexico?
But it is. It'll do probably about 135, 140, which is surprising for a four banger. And it gets up there fast. I was surprised. Matter of fact, I was just in this Corvette off today coming up from New Orleans. Come on, just a little crawl. I should be able to keep up with him through the straightaway. We were zipping through traffic. I was aggravating the shit out of me. See, I'm a little car. I could get through the holes faster. And you'd see it because he'd get on the side of me and just punch it. Yeah. That wasn't his big game.
When you're going out of New Orleans or coming into New Orleans, those straightaways, you just want to go, and everybody pretty much goes.
And we have some good.
Oh, man. So, dude, I made Margaret scream at me one time because we were going towards Baton Rouge, and I got on the straightaway, and I got that Integra, and I was going like 85, 90, like with everybody else.
Children.
That left-hand lane just kind of opened up, so I held my finger down on the cruise control accelerator, and that needle kept going and going and going, and we're going about 130, and it got up to 135. It was like, you know.
We do not condone this kind of behavior. Thank you very much. I tell you one of the weirdest things. Dude, I was in a friend of mine, Steve, had a 1955 Ford Stepside with this weird, strange flathead V6 or V8. I'm not sure what it was. Weird truck, man. Straight axle in front, right? So we got a friend of mine said he wanted to go race. It was they had this dirt track, kind of gravelish dirt track. They had out there, circle track. And he said, well, there ain't no way you're going to be able to keep up with that old raggedy truck. So you think, huh? So now I get into it. I got this truck up to 100, got it sideways. It was the perfect weight. Once you got it on the angle, it just stayed the whole way around. Mike was just flipping out because it just stayed there. You didn't even have to hardly turn the wheel. It just stayed. We're doing about 130, 135, just sliding around the track. We just passed this dude. This dude got twice the horsepower. He couldn't stay on the track. He was in and over the ditches and shit. It was funny as hell. And then I told him, his partner come out there, he was going to try to run too. I said, dude, don't even try. You got knobby ties. You're not going to slide, buddy. Oh, yeah. He almost flipped his truck. I was like, dude, you can't slide the knobs. It don't work that way. You got to have slicker tires if you're going to slide, man.
You know what we need to do to settle the debate one time, I mean, and forever is, and I'll kick your ass, old man. You ain't no Stig. I'm more Stig than you are, dude.
Get
we need to go
here,
over,
girl.
Hey, we can go over there and do this Top Gear experience and pay him some money, and they will give you the reasonably priced car, and they will time you for a lap.
Look,
I had my Camaro back from '68, I could beat both of yous. I had a 396 brand new Camaro, and I had 500 horsepower on it, and I upgraded it to 550, and I did 9.8 and a quarter, and I went down to 9.4 and a quarter in the drag strip. I outdid every cop that was in New Jersey. If I had it, I could go both.
That's running in a straight line. That's easy, man.
Even I could go zigzagging. And one time I was trying to get away from a cop, Joe. And I blew my drive shaft. The guy gave me a few tickets.
I threw a drive shaft and a 1980 Delta 98 with a 455 rocket in it. I was zinging down in his day. I didn't even tell how fast it was going. He's probably scared, y'all. I'm cruising along, just whoo, blowing down shoulders and stuff, passing people. All of a sudden, you hear, whoo, bing! And the car just start making a screaming sound because, the driver's not attached to the transmission anymore. There's no torque. It's screaming. And then we just start slowing down. And I'm watching this thing in my rear mirror praying it don't go through somebody's car, man. It's just flipping down because, it was one of them long, big, heavy drive shafts. That thing was just flipping down interstate. I was like, oh, Jesus. Thank you for not killing anybody. It was freaky. That was a badass car. It wasn't as bad as my mom. She had an old 98 too. That sucker. That 455 rocket the guy had done a little work on.
What's the highest you had ever up to? Your speed?
The fastest I ever got up to was about 175. It's on a straight run because you couldn't really get it. It wasn't made for going around turns, dude. That's all I can tell you. It was big, heavy, square car, rectangular shaped car. It wasn't made for.
No, you couldn't go 175 in that, dude. Probably at a $120, $140.
Actually, it would have went quite a bit faster than that. But every time you'd get around 170, 174, you could feel the front end would start to sway. It would just start going back and forth. But what scared me worse than that was I had a Matador. AMC Matador with a 414 barrel, and the guy, my dad had bought it from the guy who was with balance and blueprinted, right around 600 horsepower, badass car, and I actually blew the engine on that, bringing it across the causeway one night. I got off the bridge, dude, I was cruising about 145, 150, and I come over to, I was coming up to the hump, so I was slowing down, because you don't never want to go over a grade more than about 100 miles an hour, even that's risky shit, so, as soon as I come down, I punched it, because there was no cop at the crossover, so I punched it to take off again. And, man, my whole dashboard just lit up red. I'm like, what the hell? And the car started losing power, but it was still running. I'm like, what? So I get off the bridge, pop my hood, and it's just pumping oil and water out of the oil spout. I'm like, oh, shit. I knew what that meant. I had a cracked head. I already knew. Once I seen the water and the oil, I knew what it was. I was like, well, it went this car, but it's a bad car. I mean, it was fast as hell. I never did top it out. I was scared to find out where to go out at. And the fastest I've ever been in a land vehicle was on a 1100 Kawasaki with a drive shaft, and I'm not even going to tell you how fast I was going. Y'all would just be like, you're lying. And then, trust me, you can ask my friend Rick, I was going that fast. lucky to be here with y'all today. I'm just leaving it at that. You know, I was coming, Jason, we were coming down, you know, the high rise in the east.
Yeah.
Out at the top of the high rise. I was doing 100 when I hit the high rise. As we came down, Ricky tugged in behind me. I just, boom, popped it all the way down. When we hit the turn at the bottom, we were doing 150. And we wasn't even getting ready to slow down. Dude, that bike was scary fast. I mean, that's the one he almost killed himself on. So, when, matter of fact, that's the one that the guy in the back got killed on. That bike was, whew, man, that bike was badass. And
yeah, you get any leader bike is like crazy faster than anybody ever needs to go, dude. But then you see these people with Hayabusas, and that's a bike with 200 horsepower and a 1.3 liter right there. Then they're strapping turbos onto them. I mean, people just want to die.
Well, the speedometer on a bike read 260. I don't know if it actually do that or not. I know it would get to 2 because when we took it to the track, Ricky got it to 210. So I know it would do that, but as far as anything, you know, it was a badass bike. The bad part was because it had the drive shaft, there was no, you know how when you got a chain, there's a little bit of hesitation on the bike, even a powerful one has just that little 5 milliseconds. This bitch don't. And when you hit it, you're in the air if you're not paying attention because it's just all power. But the big plus to it is if you've got weight, you can lean forward and it'll stay down. Chain bike will still come up because of the way they're designed. I don't know. That was a badass bike, but a lot of them crotch rockets are badass, you know. I mean, they just got a lot of horsepower. And hell, how much horsepower do you need to go 200 miles on something that weighs a couple hundred pounds, man? Let's be honest. Anybody listening, I would tell you that. This what we did on that bike that night was stupid, okay? That's why we say young and dumb, and that's why, because I was young. I was like 22 at the time. And it was stupid because anybody could have pulled out, any rock, any pebble, any dirt, any mistake at all at that speed, because we weren't wearing leathers or anything.
Man, the pine needle could kill you.
That's what I'm saying, dude. So, you know, I'm just telling people, don't do it. You know, it sounds fun, but who sent me that? That sounds fun, but the thrill, I'm not going to lie, it isn't a serious adrenaline rush, but did you really want to play with your life?
Become a Darwin Award.
and more, what worries me more than that, it's not the dying part, because if you did, you did.
See, it's a party. This was before YouTube. You could have been famous, man.
This shit was crazy. But I'll tell you what, I used to race on a dirt track, so you can ask Mike, for about 4 or 5 years I went, and I loved it. But, you know, I had other issues.
How fast would a car go if you used nitrous in the engine?
Well, it depends on the size of the engine. I mean, if you got nitrous with a blower on a 800, 1,000 horsepower engine, I don't know, Jason, you could probably do 500-600 miles an hour easy.
A friend of mine put fuel in his car one time, and he started picking up speed, and the whole engine just blew up.
Yeah.
He used E4.
I've actually seen physical rods go through a hood of a car at high speed before. It's scary. You know, blowing stuff up. But see, I'm married now. My wife doesn't let me speed anymore.
You can watch Fail Army videos and see all the dumb stuff people are doing on Fail Army every week. I mean, you watch those videos and you're like, how? Why do you guys keep doing this?
I'm sorry, I had to get my wife.
You know where the best Fail videos come out of Russia? I mean, just
I know,
Russian.
There's a lot of Russian ones out of there.
Dude, how lucky and crazy those Russians are, just based on our YouTube Fail videos, Russians would destroy us, man. I mean...
Look, you know what? Jason, I know how the Brits are going to conquer Russia. They're gonna take all them travel vans they got and launch them on their asses.
they'll launch the red double-decker buses.
Take this, you Russian cunts!
In Russia, what side of the road do they drive on, the right or the left?
I think they drive on the left, I think.
Just like the Brits.
Yeah, just like the Brits.
I think we're the only country in the world that drives on the right side of the road.
No,
we're not the only country.
No.
Actually, I think there's more to driving the right than the left, to be honest with you. But look, Jason, we're going to get the Top Gear guys and what's them two guys that always miss bust us guys and hook them up. And see, they can get together. They'll take on the commie bastards by themselves. Wow, come on. They'll be developing their own nuclear weapons and strapping them to caravans and launching them on air tubes. Man. Get you, commie bastard.
I can kind of paraphrase the history of why we drive on our respective sides of the road. Because,
right, they're wrong.
All right. Pretty much widely regarded. I mean, yeah, there's some historical, some anecdotal stories that the first car might have actually been built in America, but Daimler-Benz basically invented the motor car and successfully marketed it and sold them. And the Germans started it. They drove on their side on the right. And, of course, their rivals across the channel in England, once they started their auto industry, they had to drive on the other side. And it basically depends on whose empire you were a part of back in the day that depends on where people drive in the world.
Well, I guess we got a billion Indians driving on the right side of the road. My brother, when he went to the U.K., he hated it. He liked being in the U.K., but he said he hated driving. He said they should have saved some extra money so they could have, took like a tour cab or something. He said he would forget because, you make the turns are opposite. So he would get in the lane and turn, and then he would realize he'd either be going around some kind of loop 8 times or he would just simply be in the wrong lane to turn out of, And he said, like, when you merge on all their highways, you merge from the left, not from the right.
And I'm like, and this is coming from somebody who's tried to make left turns in Louisiana.
And I have left turns in Louisiana. I got U-turns. That's all you got. No left turns.
You got to turn right. If you want to turn left, you got to turn right 6 times.
And if you're in the city or even in Metairie, there's basically no left or right turn. You just go straight until you finally get to a major highway where it may have been to go in a different direction.
Well, and here's another way New Orleans screws with you, right?
Hey guys, I need to get going. I think my dog wants a walk here. She's looking at me.
He's looking at me
for walk time.
Aw.
I know. Cronin wants to walk. Her favorite thing. Oh, I just said it. She's looking at me again.
Heather, you learned all about cars and driving tonight.
I know. Well, between you guys and my boyfriend who likes Formula One, I get plenty of it. So
I got plenty of ticket books here for you. I'm going to get ready to write the ticket book.
We didn't talk about NASCAR.
Hey, guys.
NASCAR.
Hey, guys. I went to Wiki to see right and left hand. Y'all got to see this map. I'm going to put this in the room. You're going to love this. It ain't even a contest, man. This is just kind of funny way. Let me post this. Look at this, ladies and gentlemen. When somebody says there's more people driving left hand, send them this link. They got it in the countries, man. The red is the right hand traffic. The left is the... So you've got Australia. You got South Africa. You've got India and the UK and some little shithole over here in South America. Oh, wait, and I think Taiwan, and that's about it. Everybody else drives on the other side of the road. We're all like, what are y'all doing, man? You're on the wrong side of the road. So I'm thinking about 5.5 billion drive on the right and 1.5 billion drive on the left. Oh, well. But that tells you something about the world right there. How can you have world peace? We can't even decide what side of the road to drive on. Jeez. Come on. That's a basic thing, man.
We're driving on the right.
Yeah, that would be a good start to world peace if we could just all drive on the same side of the damn road. But the Brits will never change their ways, ever. Evil freaking empire.
Well, the Brits don't make their own cars anymore anyway, so it's kind of a moot point. I mean, the Mini Cooper is made by BMW. I mean, Jaguar is owned by India. That's an odd twist of fate.
That's just weird. It's just Italian sports car being built in Germany, isn't it? So now it won't have any class anymore, but it'll be well built.
Yeah, Audi owns. Audi VW basically owns Lamborghini now. It's kind of weird to see.
But let us get out of here. So we gotta let Miss Heather go.
Yeah, because I babble about
the doggies been looking at me for the past half an hour. Going.
All right.
I'll talk to everybody later.
No, he's talking to all y'all. Well, I'll see y'all tomorrow since I will be out just ranting and raving and getting in general mischief tomorrow. I'm not going to ask Therese. She's not in the room anymore, is she?
She's in the room.
I'm trying to find out. Yeah, well, she had told me what date she started. I can't wait, though, man, because remember, ladies and gentlemen, Therese Sheridan is coming back to the network. She's going to have a co-host. We're not a co-host or two. I can't remember now. It's going to be a great show, as always. You can go over to the actually, she's linked on all the links now, so you can go over to United Public Radio or over to UFO Paranormal Radio and check it out. And by the way, we do have a new podcast site, another new one. It's on the Podbean. That's UFO Paranormal Radio, UFOParanormalRadio.podbean.com, I believe. And you can go over there and check it out. It's I think what we're going to do is start storing more of the UFO and paranormal stuff there and the other stuff on the United Public on SoundCloud. And or maybe we'll just keep it all in both. Who knows? And there is still Podcast Gardens and all the little ones that we've always been linked to. You can also find out there. And by the way, we are back on iTunes now. I know I really, ladies and gentlemen, I apologize. I know we had a lot of downloads. I know it was between 700,000 and 800,000. I just didn't realize how many of y'all were going to write to me because we were down for a week and a half. But it's up. Actually, there should be, when it's all said and done by the end of this week, there will actually be 3 iTunes sites. And each one will be linked to a different archive site, so you can go check them out anytime you want. And the reason why is because the archive sites are kind of tiered out now. SoundCloud has the most on them now, and then it goes down from there. And
damn, Joe, you are getting good. You are getting good at plugging this network, man. If you ever get on Coast to Coast again, that'd be like a 4-hour PRN ICAR infomercial.
Listen, dude, I'm getting on Coast soon anyway, but the thing about it is we're just in a really good spot now. That's why I've been on this with everybody on and you know and everybody listening to us. No, it's in a really good spot. It's mainly because of listeners now, but you know we finally got in a place where we have legitimate bragging rights. You know, we're like, look, you don't like it, kiss our ass, buddy, because we stomping you. And you know, I need to talk to you one afternoon too because there's a couple of hosts that have left some networks recently, and two of them I'm kind of interested in, but I might send you to talk to them. But I'll tell you about that later. And if you do have a favorite host that's maybe at Blog Talk or some network like that, or if you, you know, send them by. We are still looking for 4 shows. I want to fill up the rest of my nights and be done and over and everybody's set out and ready to go. And before, you know, the first of the year, that way I don't have to worry about it. But anyway, I'm going to let Jason walk us out of here and y'all behave yourselves. And remember, news on the flip side tomorrow night.
The master of the plug.
Okay, I'm going to hang up.
Right. That's from hanging out with George.
I'll see everybody a little later.
All right,
well, good
night, Cop. On everything. And we're not afraid to share them.
As always,
false history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the news is never on the news. But you can find it here, News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
Happy 4th of July.